My name is Lee A. Burge, Jr., and I shot and killed a very close friend of mine.
More than 25 years ago, Lee A. Burge shot and killed his friend, Michael Early, at an apartment complex in Dayton. Burge, who was 19, was a drug dealer, and Early was struggling with addiction. Burge, who served more than 16 years in prison, said he believed Early was attempting to rob him and feared for his life. The Columbus Dispatch is telling the stories of several people who took someone's life. I'm Dispatch reporter Erica Thompson, and in this podcast episode, you will hear Burge recount his experience in his own words. He shares how he was broken and then changed his life. To support journalism like this, subscribe to the Columbus Dispatch at dispatch.com/subscribe.
At the time when I did it, I believed that I was not even able to understand what it was to actually even take a life. Subsequently, I realized that with me being a child of someone who had got killed himself, I became the person that I grew up hating. As someone who was in foster care and constantly looking through foster home windows expecting my father who never came. I mean, I realized that I was the person who put somebody else's children in a foster home window waiting for a parent who couldn't come to come get them. I can remember the day being September 24th, 1993, and I can remember it was cool. I can remember standing in the housing complex. I can remember it just happening suddenly. Five shots later, I'm sitting there, standing there, and I'm looking down at someone that I care for, and life is over. Life is over, and he doesn't get a chance to recover. He doesn't get a chance to realize what he did wrong and fix it. He doesn't get a chance to sit here and say, okay, I realize that for whatever purpose I got to a point where I was bad, I was wrong. However, I recovered and then now I help people. He doesn't get that. And no matter what the addiction is, you know, I used to early on in my addiction say, well, he was smoking crack, I was only smoking weed, so it was his fault. We both ended up in the same situation. And so whether I was using alcohol, whether I was popping perks, whether I was smoking weed, or in his instance, I was smoking crack. Either way, we both ended up in that same destination to be in that same situation, September 24th, 1993 at 5:43 p.m. Both of our addictions led us there. And because of both of our addictions, one person left the scene deceased, and the other person left the scene to now start a life that I remember running away from the scene and just thinking, this is bad. This is bad. And as an 18-year-old who thought I knew what to do, nothing was the same. And I went on the run for like 2 days, and that whole 48 hours, if you will, I couldn't do anything but get high. I smoked weed, I drank, because I couldn't get the images out of my head. And I finally turned myself in on a Sunday. I remember when I left the scene of the crime, he was still breathing. And I remember sitting in a hotel, and I remember, you know, just telling my age, but back then we didn't have cell phones. And I remember using the hotel phone and calling the hospital. And I remember pretending like I was somebody else to get an update on him. And I can still hear the nurse say, and what I told her was I was flying in from out of town. You know, back then we didn't have caller ID. And I said I was flying in from out of town And I remember the nurse saying, "You don't have to rush." Even not knowing what it meant to take a life, at that moment, I still felt a loss, if that makes sense. I didn't feel what I feel now as the person or the perpetrator. I felt a loss as a friend. So I didn't feel whatever emotions go along with, like the remorse as a perpetrator. I felt 1,000 times worse because, again, like she said, you don't have to rush because that's it. So, like I said, it took me about 5 years to feel what I needed to feel in order to be broken. It broke me, but at the same time, today as I sit here, I'm grateful for the breaking because that's what allowed me to actually be able to rebuild.
When Burge returned from prison, he relied on his faith and God to guide him and slowly built a career in the drug and alcohol recovery industry. Today, he works for an agency and a residential rehab facility and provides additional recovery programs and resources for people struggling with addiction under his brand, A Different Percentile.
With me, it's been, you know, my higher power, God, is always, he cheats with me because, you know, I'm, you know, one of them analytical, you know, followers. You know, now if it's God, what's the password? You know, and why God? You sure? You know, and so God cheats. So he gives me signals, if you will. And so that was enough of it. I go on and I got with some investors and we ended up starting a drug and alcohol behavioral health center by the name of Eden. It still exists. It's located at 360 South Grant. But even with that, I'm still from the streets. You know, we did some great things. We started a whole agency that's helping people. We even have a downtown location. I'm feeling proud. But I don't know about this business stuff. It's still new to me because where I'm from, we talked about the culture and the instinct, and you tell a person. You don't like a person, you tell them. If they don't like it, y'all fight. Can't do that in business. And plus, despite the pink bow ties and the pink shirts and stuff, I have to remember people still know my past, so I can't yell at a person and get away with it as somebody else would. It becomes threatening. And so we went through some things there, and there was, you know, some issues at the top. And I got fired, and I'm like, whoa, I built this. Well, new management coming in. And it was tumultuous, and it was still building. And then that's when other people started coming and saying, hey, we saw what you did. We heard your story. We know where you came from. And you have this thing where addicts, recovering addicts, people listen to you. Hey, come work for us. I'm like, okay. And then I heard God again. Now I got to listen to him. So God sent me a text and he said, start your own thing. And, you know, I'll respond back to God. Hey, you know, I can't. I'm the child of an addict. I'm a foster child. I'm a killer. I'm an ex-dope dealer. I've done so much to other people. And then that's when it came to me, A Different Percentile. I am of a different percentile. It's a unique percentile. I am of a different percentile when we talk about. So before, I was African-American percentile, African-American males in foster care, percentile, African-American males of addicts, percentile, male children of murdered fathers, percentile, child of a single-parent home, percentile, African-American male goes to college, messes it up, drops out, doesn't even know he's messed his whole life up, percentile, African-Americans committing crimes in low-poverty areas, percentile, go to prison, percentile, continue with addiction, percentile, continue lying. Now I want to be a different percentile. Today I can say I am of the percentile. It's a small percentile. However, I am of the percentile of individuals who have recovered. And so that's why we started A Different Percentile. So today, as you see, A a different percentile represents the publishing company with the 13th step. Different percentile represents the butterfly program for young ladies who are recently or still involved in the sex slave trade. The PrEP program, which deals with recovering males to actually get you a job and help you to maintain that job even when you struggle with your addiction in that we still there. And then now most recently with partnering with KAV Health Group to even start this entity, which now allows us to be able to offer drug and behavioral health services as well as medicated assisted treatment to individuals who need it. And I'm appreciative because then now in this space, they don't hinder me. Like I said, we do podcasts. You can go to the website. And I think this is what this opiate addiction needs. It needs somebody who has been through it. It needs somebody who understands it and doesn't judge and meets you where you're at and says, okay, I understand. Let's work from where you're at. And then now, like I said, got a wife and kids and, you know, responsibilities and a dog.
Now living on the south side of Columbus, Lee A. Burge does not take his second chance for granted. He carries the burden of atoning for taking his friend's life through attempting to serve others each day.
Well, people always ask me, how do you drive off of 3 hours of sleep? How do you just keep going throughout the day? And I tell them, I owe because I took a life. I feel like every day I have to do enough good for two people. I don't take lightly the fact that because of me, I can say it's because I was the child of an addict. I can say it was because I was in foster care. I can say it was because I was abused. I can say it was because I'm the product of this, I'm the product of that. I can say that 1,000 times, but it still does not give me the right to have taken a life, and it's not easy. It doesn't. Those were rationales that I used during the trial. Those were things that for five years I used to disallow me to feel the pain. But yeah. So behind the smile, behind the everything that I do, there's still hurt. There's still hurt because I realize today, because I think to myself, how would I feel if someone took Lil Lee from me?
To read more about Lee A. Burge and the stories of others in our series, visit dispatch.com/I Took a Life.